Hi, I'm David Freudberg. Each week at the Humankind on Public Radio podcast, we strive to practice the simple art of listening. At times it can feel like a lost art in our noisy world, and of course not everything is worth listening to. But for me, when I'm able to get centered, listening can be almost a sacred experience, a moment of focused attention that accords the speaker a measure of dignity. If you value this too, please help others to find our podcast. Consider going to Humankind on Public Radio at iTunes and leave us a kind review. And thanks for listening.
The gift of freedom is a gift of action, it seems to me. And this is what Jefferson is saying, that we are in pursuit of happiness. The idea is this is an active searching, and we need to do that. Unfortunately, many of us take the apparent physical, social, political freedom and allow stuff to atrophy. That's why in the richest country on earth, in the freest country on earth, we have such abysmal statistics with regard to education and health. At the same time, the best of the best is always better than anybody else because it is the proof positive that the liberated mind, the liberated environment provides for a liberated existence.
History filmmaker Ken Burns seeks to understand the underlying purpose of our freedom. This is a Humankind special, The Meaning of America. I'm David Freudberg. Beyond the symbolism of flag-waving and patriotic clichés lies the heart of American democracy, our system of personal rights and human dignity. Conceived in rebellion against the absolute right of monarchs, the American Revolution asserted that the people are sovereign, that they must be free to speak, to choose their leaders, to pray or not pray as they wish. Messy, highly imperfect, and in need of constant maintenance, as a system that confers on us the priceless gift of human freedom.
America is an idea. America is a vision. America is a hope. America means something. At the same time, it is the most crass. It is represents modernity. It is can be violent, and it's committed unspeakable crimes. It's based on a crime of slavery. It's based on the crime of the destruction of the American Indian. People come here. Lots of people come here just for the money. They don't care about freedom. They don't care about the inner things at all. They come here and they say, look, I'm going to make a lot of money here. I can't do it in Italy. I can't do it in wherever I come from, but here I can. And they do. They come here and they make their money. They get successful. At the same time, without their even knowing it, something is touched. And they add to the mix and the strength of America without even knowing it.
Jacob Needleman in Oakland, California, is an historian and philosopher and author of The American Soul.
Something in the country still has magic. It touches people without their knowing it. After September 11th, I went over to see happens to be my auto mechanic, who's from Afghanistan. He's been here for some years. And I went over to see him because there's been some attacks on Afghan people just after September 11th. We have a big Afghan population in California here, Northern California. And he started speaking about what America meant to him. And he spoke about it with such... Sure, he came here for security, but he came here because freedom. He said, you know, you have no idea what it's like to see people who are free. And they don't even appreciate it sometimes. But for me, and he spoke of it as a spiritual thing, not simply because he was now free to make a lot of money. He said, this is a place where I came and where my grandchildren have the possibility of becoming fully human. I think that's still what America means, whether people know it or not, or like it or not. Touched me because after September 11th had enabled the love of a country to appear in us again. It's it's been there, but it's been covered over before that by a lot of us because of all the junk that was going on in Washington and all the fact that the huge dot-com bubble and all the economic power and feverish consumerism that was taking us. And we didn't really know anymore what America meant. And we didn't want it to mean just the excesses. September 11th, it was like when an earthquake hit San Francisco in 1989, everybody suddenly stopped in their tracks and realized they're alive and that life is meaningful and is more than just getting to your house and getting through the traffic. And when September 11th came, it stopped us all. And when we were stopped like that, the love of the country appeared again. Now the question is, what does it mean?
I love most about the American system a kind of indescribable perfection to it that I apprehend, that I feel close to but can't describe.
Filmmaker Ken Burns at his home looking out on the hills and green fields of Walpole, New Hampshire. For public television, he has chronicled many chapters of the history of America.
It is a kind of perfection in its organization that one can sense from reading the essentially dry words of the Constitution, which one can feel emotionally when one reads the poetic words of parts of the Declaration, that one can see in the smoke of a barbecue on the 4th of July or the crack of a bat in a softball game. It's also much finer and less filled with the cliches of American life than flags and barbecues and baseball. So to me, it's in a slum. It's when you take a train trip through the industrial guts of America and you see the byproducts of the democracy, which we try to filter out. It's there. It's in Yellowstone where, you know, rivers sort of swirl in together. It's like a little galaxy in Yellowstone. It's almost like, you know, there's a spiritual phrase, as above, so below. You could places in America, physical places, where you sort of feel the truth of that. But it's mostly in these sort of exchanges right now, you know, where you just sort of, we're here. What are we going to do with it? What will we make of it? That's all.
We're blessed with the freedom to have this conversation.
We are exactly blessed. And to say at the end, who are we? Who am I? And I'm so pleased to be able to live in a country that permits me to ask that, if I care to, every day of my life, every hour of my life, every minute, every moment.
More than a nation or a culture, you believe that America is an idea. What's the idea of America?
Well, the idea is complex.
Philosopher Jacob Needleman.
It includes a vision of human nature, a vision of the universe, a vision of reality, a vision of who we are and what we can become and how we ought to relate to each other in order to support our progress toward spiritual development. That may sound strange, speaking about America that way, and when we hear about the military and the economic and political aspects of it. But in my view, not only was America founded by, in many respects, very spiritual people and very based on very great ideas that echo spiritual wisdom, but over the course of its history, it can be interpreted and reinterpreted from a spiritual point of view.
Let's talk about the remarkable generation that founded America, including people who were deeply philosophical thinkers like Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin. They wrote voluminously on nature, divinity, history, science, and many of them, including George Washington, wrote elaborate lists of good habits for personal virtue, and they conscientiously tried to cultivate that in their lives. And in the case of Washington, he was doing it from his boyhood. How would you characterize the kind of thinkers that they were and the kind of human beings that they sought to become?
I think you could see that the Enlightenment was in itself like a universe of its own being created, a kind of a second Big Bang.
Ken Burns.
And that the energy released by the power, the incandescent power of the ideas of the Enlightenment was a hugely wonderful thing for humankind. And that you can look at our country as this first tangible sort of, you could reach out and touch the manifestation of the Age of Enlightenment. And part of that has to do with the people, that first generation of people. Jefferson is articulating political liberties, to be sure, but he's also the author of religious freedom. And this isn't freedom, we think of it now in a kind of civil liberties thing, to keep religion out of our government. This was as much to protect religious thought as it was to have a separation of church and state. We can see the advantage from one particular thing, but at the same time, this was an attempt to create a garden in which varieties of religious and spiritual pursuits could flourish. How can I worship God the way I want to worship God?
The upheaval of the American Revolution was prosecuted on the battlefield by General George Washington, commander of the Continental Army, which defeated the British. Accounts of Washington depict a man of strikingly noble bearing, widely esteemed for his personal integrity, restraint, and fairness. That reputation enabled many contentious factions among the revolutionaries to unite behind George Washington as their choice to become the fledgling country's first president. Historians still debate whether Washington had a formal religious affiliation, but his correspondence would make reference to what he called the supreme author of all good and to the importance of religious tolerance. Here the late writer Norman Cousins reads from Washington's 1775 letter to Colonel Benedict Arnold, then leading the military expedition in Canada.
He said, "You are entrusted with a command of the utmost consequence to the interest and liberties of America. Upon your conduct and courage and that of the officers and soldiers of this expedition, you have not only the success of the present enterprise and your own honor, but the safety and welfare of the entire continent to take into account. I charge you, therefore, and the officers and soldiers under your command, that you consider yourselves as marching not through an enemy's country, but that of our friends and brethren, for such are the inhabitants of Canada and the Indian nations have proved themselves in this contest between Great Britain and America. And that you check by every motive of duty and fear punishment, every attempt to plunder, insult any of the inhabitants of Canada. Should any American soldier be so base and infamous as to injure any Canadian or Indian in his personal property, I do most earnestly enjoin you to bring him to such severe and exemplary punishment as the enormity of the crime may require. Then, relating to religion, I also give it to you to avoid all disrespect or contempt of the religion of the country and of its ceremonies. Prudence, policy, and a true Christian spirit will lead us to look with compassion upon those errors without insulting them. While we are contending for our own liberty, we should be very cautious of violating the rights of conscience and others, ever considering that God alone is the judge of the hearts of men, and to him only in this case they are answerable. Upon the whole, sir, I beg you to inculcate upon the officers and soldiers the necessity of preserving the strictest order during their march through Canada. What you had here is you had in the ideas and actions of the other founding fathers was an attempt to define the true basis of freedom. You can't enjoy freedom yourself unless you respect the rights and freedoms of others. But this also means that you have to resist the attempts of those who will try to impose on you their own conceptions of truth. What is most important about truth, I think, is the search for truth. I am very much concerned and apprehensive that those who find the truth will try to drive it home at the point of a sword.
Today, Americans take utterly for granted the right to attend religious services wherever one wishes, or to meditate in solitude, or to explore various spiritual teachings, or to scorn religious practice altogether. It's an absolute guarantee carved into the Bill of Rights that establishes the basic freedoms of America. Casting out the system of state-run churches that sometimes even required attendance, the American revolutionaries asserted that spirituality must be a private matter, free of government interference or compulsion.
Washington, in his youth was concerned so much with becoming a virtuous man, of self-improvement, of character, of honor, of being upright and living according to virtue and according to principles. These were spiritual men. They may not have been religious in the sectarian sense of the term. They may have been against the church in many ways. But spiritual in the sense of the search to obey that which is higher within oneself, whether you call it reason, and you can deny all the religions in the world and still be spiritual, and you can be very religious and still be unspiritual. So that is where that thread is in Jefferson, too, who's looked upon as just this, sometimes this cunning, clever politician. If you read the way he says what democracy is supposed to be, you can only understand that it has to do with something inside a human being being able to be cultivated. Education, for example, played a very important part with Jefferson. Education wasn't just simply to get a good job. Education was to become have a developed mind and a developed feeling so you can obey the dictates of conscience more intelligently.
Another of America's visionary founders, the statesman, inventor, and publisher Benjamin Franklin, was sometimes denounced as an atheist because of doubts he freely expressed about Christian doctrine. But Franklin maintained a courteous respect for the beliefs of others. Shortly before his death in 1790, the bespectacled Franklin summed up his convictions in a letter to Ezra Stiles, again Norman Cousins.
He said in this letter to Stiles, president of Yale, "Here is my creed. I believe in one God, creator of the universe, that he governs it by his providence, that he ought to be worshipped, that the most acceptable service we render him is doing good to his other children, that the soul of man is immortal and will be treated with justice in another life, respecting its conduct in this. These I take to be the principles of sound religion, and I regard them as you do, and whatever sect I meet with them."
The beam of light that radiated when America's founders conceived a daring system of free expression did more than establish basic political liberties and self-government. It illuminated and affirmed a belief about the spirit and the dignity of the individual.
That human beings have within themselves something which some have called reason and others have called the inner divinity, like the Quakers, an inner conscience.
Historian and philosopher Jacob Needleman, author of The American Soul.
So I would say the fundamental vision of America is that human beings are created with an inner spark of divinity, which is meant to guide their lives and allow them to relate lovingly and caringly to each other, and that a government, a constitution, needs to protect that possibility in us. That is what government is for, is to give us the freedom and the liberty to pursue the spiritual quest within ourselves.
It seems to be a system that permits itself to improve.
Filmmaker Ken Burns.
I mean, we're not just for life, liberty, but the pursuit of happiness. And it isn't just happiness. We get distracted. What did he mean? Is it happiness, a hedonistic pursuit of pleasure in a marketplace of things? Or is it, as Jefferson probably intended by the word happiness, the pursuit of art and literature, knowledge, science, understanding, industry, commerce, progress in a marketplace of ideas? Absolutely. But it's not even the word happiness that means anything. It's the pursuit. We are a nation becoming. That's what they designed. They designed a system that said, it's not we're there. We always see ourselves as corrigible. Yeah, well, you know, we love it, but you know, there's problems. We'll get better. You know, and we have a system that permits that sort of getting better. We take a few steps forward. Sometimes we take steps back. You know, there's reprehensible side effects that are toxic for many, many people on the edges of our society, which shame me. Every day.
Such as?
Race, still, poverty, our lack of concern about health. You know, we make sure, we codify that every person can have a gun in this country, but we do not codify that everyone has the right to health, to access to medical stuff. That seems to me an abomination. We don't focus on education the way we should. At the same time, we do many things extraordinarily well, and it's important to, you know, to celebrate them at the same time.
The amazingly open atmosphere of America promotes an effervescent circulation of ideas. There are limits to free speech, but in America it remains largely unpoliced, except, of course, by the marketplace, which is increasingly domineered by giant media corporations and the financial agendas they naturally bring with them. As observed by journalist A.J. Liebling, freedom of the press is guaranteed only to those who own one. But it remains possible in the United States to stand on a street corner and hand out leaflets or to launch a worldwide website from your den without government approval. All of which subjects us to blowhards and crackpots as much as to poets and sages, for they are all guaranteed a place at the American feast of free expression.
You said the purpose of free speech in America is to allow the interplay of ideas toward building community and reaching for high truths. Does it feel like that to you when you listen to most of our mass media today?
No, it's not. But it's the up to a point, that's the price we pay to have the other function as a possibility.
Jacob Needleman.
So you have the price you pay for having the possibility of speaking from conscience and listening to the other is the fact that you have a lot of babbling and a lot of nonsense and a lot of violence and a lot of damn bad stuff going on. But when you think about the grown-up vision of what freedom of speech means, then you start thinking about all these rights that we have in the Bill of Rights and in the Constitution, and how, even though it may sound simplistic, again, it's not, it's very deep, how we need to understand what the duties are that go with the rights. There's no such thing as rights without duties. That's an adolescent view of rights. Gimme, gimme, gimme. But you don't see people marching in the streets with their duties, burning the flags. We demand our duties. No, they want their rights. But what is the duty that goes with freedom of speech? It must be in part at least two things. If I'm free to speak my conscience, if I'm free to speak my heart, if I'm free to speak what I think and what I feel, I am therefore obliged to let you do that. I'm obliged to listen, to try to listen to the other person. Freedom of speech without the obligation to listen, is it just another kind of adolescent tyranny? I also have to be free. If I'm free of speech, I must be obliged to at least try to speak the truth, at least in the situations where the truth is required. And so to look at the obligations, and they're all inner obligations. They have to do with what I do with my inner attention toward myself. I need to listen to you, then I can speak. Or I can speak, and then I need to listen to you, and you are obliged to listen to me. But now so much of our speech, of course, is just I wait for you to stop talking, and I come in and I talk, or I talk, talk, and you talk, talk. So Jefferson was very clear on that. If you read some of his notes, his letters, he speaks about how important it is to let the other person who disagrees with me speak and be willing to receive that. And it's a spiritual power to do that. It's not so easy as it sounds, as we all know. Truth, to a large measure, truth is a social phenomenon, not so much, although it has an individual element that I myself find it, I don't find it without you, without the other.
Kind of a jigsaw puzzle where all the pieces are needed to see the whole picture.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, one of the horrendously toxic byproducts of an American society is vast legions of people who have squandered not only their spiritual and human birthright, but the American gift of liberty and not pursued it, have chosen a kind of desolatory existence.
Ken Burns.
And we hope that the things in our society wake people up or remind them, maybe higher patriotic callings, whatever it is that may lift one up.
What are some ways now that people wishing to pursue happiness, the highest kind of happiness, can engage themselves in that journey?
Well, turn off your television set, and that is sort of self-defeating for me because I make television programs. But there is no greater passive instrument in our existence than television. It lulls us to a sleep. It doesn't use very much of our brain. I mean, so you could replace that with reading, which is an active thing, with conversation with other people. You would try to manipulate this freedom to get you or yours the best possible education you could. And then I think that, you know, besides freeing us from these various tyrannies of the lack of knowledge, the lack of action that television, for a moment, for me, symbolizes that kind of passivity, I think that we need to, in our own way, somewhere along our lives, take this freedom that we have, that exists, that is self-evident, and apply it to some question of self-perfection, to just move this along, because it will have benefits not only to ourselves but to our posterity in the biggest sense of that word, you know.
You're listening to Humankind. I'm David Freudberg. Our program is presented by Human Media in association with The Network, Incorporated. Studio recording by Steve Colby. Editorial assistance from Francis McGovern. Musical selections from Tripping Across America by Gunnar DeBose and Mr. Madison's Crystal Flute by Rob Turner and Frank Wallace. Special thanks to Kathy Graham and Seth Doraswamy. Program development and support provided by Chart Media.
If you'd like to purchase a cassette copy of Humankind by phone, please call toll-free 1-800-5-LISTEN. That's 1-800-5-L-I-S-T-E-N. To learn more about this and our other programs, and to hear selected episodes online or to order tapes online, check our website, humanmedia.org. That's humanmedia.org. We'll give that again in a moment. Major funding for this program is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Again, for tapes of Humankind, call 1-800-5-LISTEN, and our web address is humanmedia.org.
This segment on The Meaning of America, Part 1, is Humankind Program number 56.
To hear more episodes of Humankind, you can subscribe to our free podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast player. A new episode each week. The podcast title is Humankind on Public Radio. And if you enjoy this program, be sure to leave us a kind review at iTunes and Stitcher. If you want to support the program, please visit humanmedia.org. And at the top of the homepage, click on How You Can Help. Again, our web address is humanmedia.org. Thanks.